Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Hi, CityCast listeners. On Fridays, we talk about the week's news in Houston. Today, I am here with CityCast producer Carleon Jones and our cultural contributor, Aunt Rochelle Dorsey. It is Friday, November 18th, 2022. I'm Lisa Gray, and this is CityCast Houston. All right, Carly, what do you think the biggest story of the week was?
So I feel like the biggest story of the week was Governor Abbott calling for that investigation into Harris County elections. It sounds like people are sore losers in my eyes because he filed a lawsuit against Clifford Tatum, the Harris County elections administrator, citing that there were delayed polling places opening that prompted an ongoing legal battle, and then a shortage of paper ballots at some polls, and then also understaffing at other polling places. So he wants the Secretary of State, Attorney General, and Texas Rangers to incite like probes into an allegation. Like, I don't know. All of this just sounds crazy.
Y'all, it's too much. Like, it's really too much.
I agree. It's too much. I mean, I have to say, like, voting was a mess.
Yes.
You know, like,
as always.
They ran out of ballot paper at a bunch of places because they couldn't unlock the place where they had it locked up. I mean,
paper? I mean, come on,
They had people waiting for hours to vote. I mean, that's not good. I got to agree there.
My thing is, it's 2022.
That's what I'm saying. In the year of our Lord and Savior, 2022, why is this not even electronic? Like, come on, y'all. Like, what are we doing?
Well, it is, but they keep the paper so that there's some record. So that
why do we need the paper? Don't we have enough digital data to make it secure? Come on. Like, stop.
Well, like, you know, digital data is not secure, Aunt Rochelle.
I mean, technology is great until it don't work, but you know.
So I think we need the backups. I understand that, but still, I think it was a mess. And I also think you're right, Carly, that they're overreacting, that they're making a political deal out of it.
There was way more places that like closed on time than like versus maybe what the 20 that didn't, that he's actually doing an investigation on. I don't think that you're going to investigate and then find anything that's going to make these people win that you wanted to win, you know?
Right.
But we never know. Some races were a little closer.
But like, I think the bigger game for Republicans is to like throw Harris County's votes into doubt, because we're a big source of Democrat votes.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 years from now, when there's a presidential election, you know, if you've sowed seeds of doubt, maybe you can throw out a bunch of votes. I think that's the bigger game. I mean, this is my big story, is sort of that pattern, you know, casting Harris County's votes into doubt, of making it harder to vote in Harris County. Because we had a couple of other stories in addition to that one, Carly. So this week, Kim Ogg, the Harris County DA, announced that she is launching an investigation into the voting.
I've seen that.
It's a little unusual because Kim Ogg is a Democrat. Now, she fights with Lena Hidalgo and the Democrats on county court, but, you know, she too is launching an investigation. And there was a story where this Trump-appointed judge, U.S. District Judge Charles Eskridge, stopped the League of Women Voters from handing out voter registration cards at a swearing-in ceremony for new citizens.
What?
Yeah. I mean, it's legal. He has the power to do that. But, like, Why would you?
But why would exactly. you do that, though? You know, the one thing that I was just about to say, like, why don't we launch an investigation on why Black and brown voters are not voting? You know, why Black and brown people are not voting? And before I could get it out of my mouth, you tell me this. You know what I'm saying? So
mm-hmm. I really feel like, personally, that I can't wait till, I don't know if this will ever happen, but if we could ever get to the point where we can do electronic voting, where it's like you can vote through computers without having to actually go to polling sites, we would have so mm-hmm. many people that would actually participate in it. Now, I know that their excuse for it is like, oh, that's not secure, that's not going to be able to, but there's so many documentations on like our lives that have our like social security numbers. There's so many different things that we yeah. put vital information into that they find a way to secure.
I pay my taxes online. I handle my bank account online.
Exactly.
You know, why can't I vote for probate judge online? I mean, that's, yeah.
That would get a lot of people to the polling sites. People just really don't feel like getting up to go. Like, it's a laziness, and I understand that, but it's just like, there's so many people that are actually registered that just either just haven't made the time to actually get out there. But I think that they know that if that were to happen, Republicans would not be winning a lot of races, because it's just, yeah, I don't think they would. But, you know, they could surprise us.
Oh, child. This is a lot. It's heavy. And it's just, it's too, I can't say anything else, but y'all, this is too much. Like, and unfortunately, this is a huge deal. So we can't dismiss it. We have to address it, but how do we fix it? That's mm-hmm. the thing. We have so many problems and no solutions, and this yeah. is what makes us sad, and this is why people are still divided, or people in the Black and brown community are just really feeling like, our votes don't matter. Why does mm-hmm. it matter? You know, if we get up and vote, you know, they're going to say it's a hoax. If we don't vote,
yeah.
then, you know, we have to endure. So what do we do? Gosh.
You get mad.
Yep.
Yeah. You get mad.
Go vote.
Very frustrating.
Get yeah. mad and but vote yeah. anyway.
Yeah. I mean, but anyway. Aunt Rochelle, what is your biggest story of the week?
Okay.
Uh-huh.
This story here. It's big yeah. to me because it happened right in my hood in Southeast Houston, okay?
Yeah.
This woman walked into a Southeast Houston business and robbed the convenience store for cigarettes.
No. No way.
Of all the things.
Oh, she went that in nicotine. There yeah?
With her pink fuzzy slippers.
Oh.
Her biking shorts, her hoodie, and a gun, and said, I need them cigarettes right
at
now.
Gunpoint?
At gunpoint, baby. And honey, they oh are looking God. For this woman. And this was in my hood, 7500 block of MLK Boulevard.
Yeah.
I am upset. I'm shocked and appalled, because she should have got a pack of Slim Jims with her too. She should have got something else. If she gonna rock, if she gonna oh do gunpoint, you better get some Pampers. You better get you better get a Tahitian treat, a Hawaiian punch,
some food to go,
cigarettes.
Something. Oh
baby,
gosh.
That nicotine fit just would not quit, and they are looking for her. They are looking for her for real. They are upset, and they are saying that this woman. Is she robbed him for cigarettes?
Yeah. Oh, kids, is don't start
that
smoking.
Deep? That's what yeah. I say. Like, y'all, I ain't never smoked no cigarettes.
We're going to say she was having, like, a really bad day, and just that was the, her breaking point. Because
Charlie,
there's girl. No way. Oh, my goodness.
No, she, but there are people in the store. She pointed the gun at the customers and the clerk.
Wow.
Oh.
Yeah.
And they
traumatizing.
Yeah.
This is bad. Yeah.
But they're looking for this woman because they said she walked out of the store and fled in a red Kia Soul. Ladies and gentlemen, if you see this woman in a red Kia Soul, give us some cigarettes. Get out her way. She got a gun.
She didn't even steal gas. Like, you know, gas is, you know, a little high.
Why she ain't steal the gas? You know what I'm saying? Like, oh. Why you didn't do that? I couldn't believe, I'm shocked and appalled, because this is a big story, because this is a breaking news story. They stopped this. They want y'all to call Crime Stoppers for this woman.
Oh
they did. They got a surveillance and everything. Y'all, this is for real.
Oh, my.
This lady, she must be stopped. I want to know. And like you say, Carla, she must, maybe that nicotine wouldn't quit. She must have been having a very, her nerves was bad. Because I just remember when my aunts used to smoke their cigarettes, their nerves was bad. That's what they used to tell me. My nerves is bad. And so they used to smoke a pack of cigarettes. And I'm thinking her nerves was bad this day.
Yeah, had to be.
Well, look, this is aggravated robbery.
And she was aggravated, definitely. All right, Carly, moving on. What do you think should have gotten more attention this week?
So mine is also crime, but in a little darker sense. So the number of Houston kids that have been killed by gun violence is rising to the point that it's becoming a national crisis. 53 children and teenagers died from firearm injuries through October of this year, which already surpassed the amount of last year. And we haven't even finished the year, you know? So they listed it as 41 homicides, 11 suicides, and one accident among a child under 18. So the total last year, I think, was 52. So this is just like, it just keeps rising. So in 2018, it was 34. In 2019, it was 40. And then in 2020, it was 42. And then 2021, 52 for the entire year. Memorial Children's Hospital also released a stat that was like really like eye-opening to me. They announced in June that they had already treated 140 children for gun wound shots.
Shut up.
In the last year. Like, 75% of a jump from 3 years ago. It's like, what is happening with these babies? Are we not locking our guns up? Are we, like, what is going on that is, like, triggering this to get so bad? These are babies. These are kids, you know? Like,
I mean, some of them are teens, but they shouldn't have guns. They should not be shot.
They're teens, but I still look at them as everybody's like a little baby. And because it's like they're like, most of them are like really young teens. Like the teens are like about like 14, 15. Like I just came into high school, teenage age, you know, like they're still kids. They still have so much life ahead of them. So this is just like a really devastating thing to like see. And like there was a Houston Chronicle article over it, and they interviewed some of the families and had pictures, and it was just really a heartbreaking story to see. And I just wish people would, like, you know, look into things like this more so that we can try to figure out ways to stop it. That was my story.
But y'all remember we talked about like the gun laws in Texas? Don't you think that this has something to do with that? I'm just throwing this out there. It's so easy to get a gun in Texas, right? And we're like, what's happening? Y'all, come on. Let's focus on the lecture at hand. Like, it's so easy to get a gun. It's so easy for these children to get it. And even the ones with the accident, it's like, dang.
And if the kids... say that the kids might have like stole a gun from their parents or something. This is a hypothetical thing, but so many people, now that you don't even have to be trained to have a gun anymore, they don't know how to use it properly. Like, you know, there's that, that's a whole factor also. Like whenever I got my gun license, I was trained.
They don't necessarily lock it up.
Yeah, they're not locked up properly. They're not showing their kids, hey, this is how you use it if it is around you. You know, there's different factors that need to go into this. Like, there's a lot of safety that needs to be surrounded or taught to these children that are around these guns.
Yeah.
So.
Definitely. My story is also about guns in the wrong hands. There was this infuriating ruling by a Texas federal judge, David Counts, a guy who was appointed by Donald Trump. He ruled that if a court finds that a person is dangerous to other people around them, like in a domestic abuse case, the judge can't hand down a protective order that takes away the dangerous person's gun because of the Second Amendment. And this just is boggling to me. I don't see how you can leave guns in the hands of people who we believe to be dangerous.
Why would you? Like,
right. And I'm dumbfounded because I feel like, are we just y'all, when do we just, I feel like we just pulled these amendments out of our behind when we feel like it.
Yeah.
Like when it's necessary or when it's convenient. When it's convenient, I'm just so disgusted right now. What?
I mean, I do think the United States has a different relationship with guns than we did in, you know, the 1700s. You know, and it's time we figure out how to, like, live in cities.
Mm-hmm. Because it makes me, like, the whole statement of, like, you know, letting them keep guns even though they may be a dangerous person or are a dangerous person, it just makes me think about, like, all the people who have been getting out of jail. Like, they'll have petty crimes or have some, like, criminal record. They get out of jail and then they go kill somebody else. Like, that's been happening a lot in Houston lately. And I don't know. I don't think they care about our safety at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's like Michael Jackson said a long time ago. Michael Jackson. All I want to say is that they don't really care about us. He wasn't lying. That's what Michael Jackson had said. He sang it to us. We do the two-step shuffle to it. Oh, all I want to say, they don't really care about us, baby.
They can't.
All right, Aunt Rochelle, what do you think should have gotten more attention?
Look, since we're talking about guns, I got a gun story for you, too.
Three in a row. Oh, Lord.
Yes. Now, here we go again. Okay. A manhunt is underway for a robber dubbed by the FBI as the food store bank bandit. This man is robbing the food town at gunpoint. Two grocery store banks. One was the food town off of Sam Houston Parkway West. He did it on November 1st. He went inside the food town, went to the first convenience bank inside the grocery store and handed the bank teller a note demanding money. And then he pulled out his gun. Now, if you do not have a background in banking, which I do, I was a bank manager for 13 years. What you don't know is that these tellers, if you're demanding money from them, in their drawer, at most, they have $1,000. That's it. And it's all broken down, all broken up, all broken down. At a food store, in the grocery store, it's even less than that. He didn't get that much money, right? So because of that, he went to another. Yeah. He went to another store. He went to the Joe V's grocery store on Antoine Drive in Northwest Harris County. And he went inside the store and went to the bank inside of the grocery store and got money at gunpoint again. Again, wasn't that much money. They are unsure at the full amount. Mm-hmm. But what can you do at the bank grocery store, you guys?
Yeah. Did he get cigarettes?
He didn't get no cigarettes. He in there at the grocery store. He ain't get no food.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm mad at these robbers. I need to hold a class on how to rob smartly because this made me mad.
Oh, my Lord.
I say of all the things, y'all worried about the wrong thing. You passed up the chips, the bread, the milk, and I'm going to say it again, the Pampers.
I'm really wondering, like, what's the thought process with the grocery store? Does he feel like he can get out of the grocery store quicker? Or
It just seems like there would be so many more people around.
Yes!
That would be so much more dangerous.
It's hard to rob a grocery store bank. It's harder to rob a grocery store bank. Now, let me make you laugh. When he went into the second grocery store at the Joe V's, he walked up and asked about opening a bank account.
He's trying to play it off.
Because he had money to deposit from the last bank.
Yeah.
Oh,
guys, this is sad. I'm glad I could make some light of this. But y'all, this is not funny because now the FBI looking for this man. The police was looking for the cigarette girl. The FBI looking for this man because he done robbed two banks. Do you know how bold you have to be to rob a bank inside the grocery store with all those people around?
Anyone can tackle you. And then most of the time, grocery stores actually have like a security guard like at the front somewhere. So
that's
it's like
you're
bold. You're very bold.
You're bold. You ain't got nothing to lose.
You have to walk out to your car, wherever you park.
Okay. I mean, you ain't got nothing to lose. You going for the gusto, baby.
All on camera.
All on camera. We got you coming and going.
Oh, my.
Houston's original neighborhood downtown is for everyone, and it's poppin'. It's our open-hearted home for our biggest celebrations and our treasured hidden gems. From the world-class theater district to incredible green spaces like Discovery Green, downtown is the place to be. In fact, more people visited downtown Houston last year than the entire population of Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin, and San Antonio combined. There's no better time to live downtown than now. From starter apartments to luxury lofts, everyone can take advantage of the arts, business, culture, entertainment, food, and recreation. Now, you might think of downtown as only the heartbeat of Houston's regional economy, which it is, but there's so much more to it, including free events throughout the week with Downtown Houston Plus. From the Market Square Park Farmers Market every Saturday to Yoga Flow every Wednesday, you can find something to do and eat and watch in downtown Houston. Learn more at downtownhouston.org. Downtown Houston, get energized and revived.
All right, Carly, what is your moment of joy this week? What's made you happy?
So my moment of joy is that on Monday, Astros fans went to Raising Cane's to see Jeremy Pena. That was so cute. If you saw like the pictures that were released online, he dressed up in his Raising Cane's outfit and was basically taking orders.
Like a regular cashier.
He was a regular cashier, and then he also worked the drive-thru. A lot of people, you know, missed work, school, classes, just to go up there and like in hopes of him taking their order, basically maybe getting a like autograph and, you know, some chicken. So it was really cool because people were out there in their like Astros gear. You know, a lot of women are in love with this man too. So they were all, you know,
so
getting
cute.
Done up in the car. And it was really cute. It was literally 50 degrees outside. There was sporadic rainfall, but these people were still out there dedicated, screaming, excited. They even closed down the fast food chains, the Popeyes and Burger King that were next to the Raising Cane's for the event.
Oh.
So it was, yeah.
But listen, I mean, that's cute and all. But what about Altuve?
I knew she was going to say it.
Y'all know that's my man.
Altuve. Every time I hear his name, that's what I think of now.
Altuve, that's my baby. Now, see, I would have done that for him, and I would have had a little thigh out there. I'm talking about my thigh, okay? I would have had it out. I would have been like, Altuve. I would have had my fro big. And I would have made sure.
Oh,
I would have, matter of fact, I would have served him the chicken. Okay.
Oh.
I don't on a platter, want
to,
huh?
On a platter. Let me feed it to you, Altuve.
Oh my gosh. Woo! This was such a cute event. And it's like this was literally like, because he's so young. I think he's only like 19.
And he looks like he's like 18 or maybe 16. Such a baby face. Yeah.
Yeah, he's super young. This is his first job outside of playing baseball. So. Uh-huh.
Oh.
It was a really cute moment.
I love that. So I thought about Justin Verlander, who won the Cy Young Award for Best Pitcher this week as my moment of joy. But then it got beat out. So y'all know how Governor Abbott has been sending these busloads of asylum seekers to other cities, just kind of dumping them on other cities, making the point that, you know, Texans shouldn't be the only ones who are like supporting these people. Doing it in the meanest way possible. Well, he shipped a bunch for the first time to Philadelphia. And, like, Philly showed up. You know, when that bus pulled up, there was, like, a city council person there. There were a whole bunch of volunteers. They handed people hot chocolate and coats.
Aww.
One kid on the bus had a high fever. They took the kid to the hospital. They took everybody to, like, this settlement center where they could get hooked up with services.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, you know, Philly, that is class. Y'all rock. I am sorry for all the trash talk I did during the World Series. You know, I officially apologize.
I love it. I like that. Now, that's how you turn lemons into lemonade. That's how you do that.
For sure.
That's how you do it.
That's beautiful.
I love it.
So, all right, Aunt Trishelle, you have some joy this week.
Oh, I did.
Yeah.
I had some joy. Let me tell you, dun, 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 dun. I got married.
What?
Woo!
I got married. What? I know what you're thinking, because I know y'all niggas. I said, I don't ever want to get married again. Mm-hmm. I said, me and my man, my baby daddy, we've been together for going on 6 years. We all right. Mm-hmm. I don't need to get mm-hmm. married. But then he came to me as humbly as he know how and said, what are we doing? And I said, you right. So we wanted to have a surprise wedding, and we did. We invited mm-hmm. all of our yeah. closest friends. We told them we were having a midnight masquerade ball, and mm-hmm. they all came dressed to the nines in their masks, and they yeah. came dressed out ready to party. And at the stroke of midnight, we got married, and it was the best oh. wedding ever. We didn't have any big to do. It was just in our home.
That and was a big to do though, Aunt Rochelle.
This is different. Who came up with the idea? Was it you? Because this is different. I've never thought of like a stroke of midnight wedding. That's so cool.
A surprise wedding.
So I'm going to be honest yeah. with you. Like, all he wanted was a party, right? Uh-huh. There is a celebrity event planner. Her name is Chloe Cook. Shout out to Chloe Cook. Uh-huh. We grew up together. We from Sunnyside together. She is a celebrity event planner. And I've seen her do these beautiful midnight masquerade ball. Mm-hmm. And I just always was like, that is the greatest idea ever. Yeah. But I don't have Chloe Cook money, okay? So I saw her do it for, I think the first time I ever seen it was for her birthday years ago. And I saw her do it for someone else. And I thought this was just like the most genius idea. Uh-huh. And so when my now husband, but my husband said, you know, look, I want a party. Let's make it different. Let's make people dress up. And that's what I said. Oh, we could have a midnight masquerade. I thought this would be a great yeah. way to have, you know, my very own little midnight masquerade. So I just added the dramatics for the detail when our guests arrived. Our beautiful hostess, which is our neighbor, Rabia Ali, she told everyone to set their phones to midnight. Mm-hmm. And when they set them to midnight, she said, the show will begin at midnight. Please set your phones to midnight. And then with the stroke of midnight, the phones just erupted. And I almost ran out of there because I immediately got nervous. Was like, oh, it's time. It's time. And it was beautiful. You know, I didn't do a big dress or anything. I wore a sexy Fashion Nova cat suit that I had in the closet that still had price tags on it. I had my girl, favorite makeup artist, Susie Bougie, come over and beat my face looking like a mask, you know. So you viewers, please enjoy the pictures. And it was wonderful. It was great. My husband, he did a whole charcuterie table inspired by the Chatty Mouse, who we love. And, you know, he did all the decor. And that was it, y'all. You know, it cost us $700 to do it at our house. $700.
Mm. Oh, dang.
Oh, yeah.
That was on food and liquor, because you got to eat and drink at my house.
Congratulations.
Oh, my gosh. Congrats. Thank I can't wait to so see much. These pictures.
Oh, you're going to love them.
All right, y'all. This has been fun. Thanks
it
a
has.
Lot. That was Carleone Jones and Aunt Rochelle Dorsey. That is all for our show this week. Our content director is Will Fulton. Lead producer, Dina Kesva, is away on parental leave. Carleone Jones and A.K. Al Mulman are our producers. Our newsletter, Hey Houston, is written by Brooke Lewis. Our show about ephemeral tattoo had sound design by roving producer Lizzie Goldsmith. Our theme music is by All the Kimonos, and I am your host, Lisa Gray. We will be back on Monday. Talk with you then. Are y'all hearing that sound?
Yeah.
It's me.
Okay.